and action, and oh, it just makes this series, this expertise, this level of expertise that Science Sato has, just makes the Scott Pilgrim Takes Off series so much more interesting to watch. And it's no wonder that a lot of people who are really into animated works have been saying that this series might be one of the, if not the best, then one of these best animated works that have come out in 2023. There's also a really great utilization of, like, nostalgia, almost in a way that's not necessarily too on the nose. The story in this series is set kind of like in the mid-2000s, I guess. So there's that. But they brought on most of the cast of the live action movie to do the dubbing in English, and they brought back Anna Managuchi, who's done a lot of work for the Scott Pilgrim franchises as well. Anna Managuchi are like this collective of electronic music people who make like bloop bloop fun bloop bloop sounds. Very good at explaining things today. But, you know, it just makes, I think, like, wanting to get into the series, as if you were like a fan of Scott Pilgrim, it makes it a lot more easy. And again, because not everything, like, it is kind of like a different take on the same story, it makes it still more engaging. And I don't know, I personally am not a huge fan of reboots, and haven't watched very many reboots for the reason that I don't care for a reboot. But perhaps, you know, this is a pretty good or a solid somewhat adaptation of the original graphic novel. Again, gotta reread the graphic novel, but maybe that's what it is. Maybe that's what I'm trying to say. One thing, though, that I really have to say, as an adult watching this series, recalling the graphic novels, there is one thing that strikes me that I need to share with you. So Wallace Wells is a character in this series. He is Scott Pilgrim's cool gay friend and roommate. And watching Scott Pilgrim Takes Off, recalling Scott Pilgrim, the graphic novel series, I now, in my late 20s, as a full-fledged queer adult, gotta say, Wallace Wells was definitely written by somebody who is not a queer man. Because he spends his entire time with heterosexuals. Why is he spending so much time with the heteros? Wallace, are you okay? I know it's the mid-2000s in Toronto, but at least you're in Toronto. Wallace, I think it's time for you to go out and make some new friends and not hang out with your loser straight roommate all the time. I'm just saying. I mean, personally, as a queer woman myself, like, I don't choose to hang out with heterosexuals. It is more like an obligation that I do. Like, if you are the one of the few heterosexuals who, you know, I talk to, that, good for you. You're in my good books. Probably so much so that I think you're a part of the family in some ways. But I do not choose to spend all my time with the heteros, unlike Wallace Wells, who's very much, okay, at the very least, not written by a queer woman. If I wrote a queer if I wrote a gay guy character, he would certainly would not be hanging out with the cishets all the time. Again, mid-2000s, but you're in Toronto, you have some options. You can make some friends outside of your roommate and his sister. I'm just saying, you know, that's my queer critique on Scott Pilgrim. That's the only queer critique that I have for now. We're gonna move on to some more music. Speaking of Anna Managuchi, here we go with a track that's very, you know, local. This is Vancouver.
I'm not okay. These kids are screaming. It's a bad dream. It's a new. coffee. Look at what you cost me. I will leave it all in a heartbeat. Found the ladder that you left in the car seat. I'ma set fire to the whole thing, but it won't do much cause I want it all. I'm not okay. There's kids are screaming. I just thought you needed to know. I'm not okay. Don't you worry, I have everything in control.
Welcome back to Typically Tuesdays. You just heard I'm Not Okay by Chan Mina. My name is Leslie. And we talked a little bit about Scott Pilgrim Takes Off earlier this hour, but now it's time to talk about something else. Welcome to Idol Hell. This week we watched episode 7 of Produce 101 Japan, season 3, and we saw the final chunk of the position battle performances. It was good. I enjoyed this episode, I think, a little bit more than I did the previous one, except I was really quite not happy with the fact that on YouTube, they couldn't... oh my goodness, like, they couldn't, like... They couldn't get past the copyright for the song Bijin by Chan Mina, and so you have 4 minutes of nothingness, of just like nothingness in this episode in the middle of it, and it's horrible. It sucks. That was kind of crappy. Other than that, it was a pretty strong episode, I felt. Number one, gotta acknowledge the alto representation and appreciation that we're seeing, perhaps a new trend, maybe, in the idol world. Hope so. Takabatake Momoka and Sakaguchi Urino, both of them, showed their lower huskier singing voices this episode and got the top votes in their groups. We love to see it. Again, hopefully, maybe this means that there is going to be more of an appreciation for altos in a female idol fandom. Number two, and in turn, of course, we'll actually see some more of that in the songs. Number two, gotta give it up for my girl Ishiran, who won the entire episode, got the top votes of this week. We love to see it. We love to see her defeating Sakurai Miu. And we will never talk about why. I think it's just a little bit too much. But number three, and finally, actually the main thing that I wanted to talk about today on the recap, Chan Mina made an appearance on the program, did a little bit of a coaching session with some of the contestants who were in the rap vocal performances. watching the contestants lose their minds over Chanmina was so heartwarming. It was great. Because I recall what I was talking about last week, and one of the things that I failed to mention was the fact of that, like, despite idol fandoms now seeing more women in them, I mean, you know, the consumption of this media, this content, the production of these things, obviously they're still very capitalistic and neoliberal, and in many ways can be quite harmful. Like, these idols are going to have to conform to a really specific beauty standard. They're not going to be able to say certain things that they might want to say that maybe like a regular normal human being who has thoughts are allowed to say. Even the stuff that they post on social media is going to have to be monitored by their managers and their production company, and they're going to be, you know, kind of worked to death. Let's be very frank. The system that they're in, they're going to be working all the time, and it sucks. Those are not the great things about observing. Those are not great things to observe as a female idol fan of female idols. And watching the contestants lose their minds over Chanmina was so striking, because Chanmina's whole thing is quite different from how a female idol performer is going to kind of like curate her career. If you don't know who Chanmina is, she is this Japanese-Korean rap pop star, I guess. She is known for writing really frank and earnest, really genuine and sincere lyrics. She funds most of her own like productions and things like that. She curates her own self-image, and she likes to have a lot of control over that kind of stuff, which is great. These idols are not going to have that. Whoever debuts after Produce 101 Season 3 Japan, they're not going to have much of that ability. And that can be kind of like, it can feel kind of weird to digest. I remember watching an interview that Chanmina did some time ago, in which she talks about how all the songs that she writes, all of the performances that she directs, all the concerts that she holds and that she curates, she does that all for her younger self. And there's this lyric in her song, which must be, like, honestly, like, one of her smash hits, Bijin, which means beauty. The song is about how when she had first debuted at 17, people would harass her and say that she would never be able to make it big, she would never be able to be famous because of the way that she looked. And when she talks about the song, she mentions how she was inspired to write it because after that period of like intense harassment and bullying online, she lost a lot of weight from the chronic stress. And then afterwards, people started to say, oh, she was cute, she was pretty. And it didn't make sense to her how she could be at her most unhealthy and be considered beautiful. So there's this verse in Bijin where she's talking to her guitar, Julie. She named her guitar Julie. And Julie is saying, isn't it scary that there is no precedent? There's nobody who's like you. then in that case you have to be the role model. And Chanmina says, what should I do if I'm still scared? And so Julie tells her, like, well, you have to help that girl. You have to help who you were. You have to help that 17-year-old. You have to help that little kid who wanted to make music, and who maybe didn't fit the typical look to become a superstar. Obviously, there's a lot of layers to that, too. I mean, like, Chanmina is just, like, very fair-skinned, like, East Asian, cisgender woman. Like, there's a lot of stuff in there about pretty privilege that we can unpack. But knowing that part of... knowing that as kind of, like, her catalyst to continue to do what she does, to create spaces for girls like her can dream of becoming a superstar and stuff like that, is interesting when you put it up against how these same girls will pursue a career, as in being idols, pursue a career in being an idol, and they won't be able to do, they won't have nearly as much agency as what Chanmina has when she herself is, like, making her own songs, making her own music videos, directing her own concerts. I just thought that was really, really interesting and kind of fascinating to sit with. I certainly, like, myself, me, I am not exact, like, I do not look like I would be an idol. Like, I am... this, not to give too many spoilers, but I'm, like, not exactly fitting in with the pretty privileged type thing. I am old, I am overweight, you know, a lot of other things, but, you know, you just can't help but to think about the role of, I just can't help but to think about, like, gender and representation, or I guess, like, maybe not so much representation, but, like, authenticity in these fandoms, and also, of course, yeah, and also representation, you know. I hope that one day we will see a lot more diversity in female idol industries and spaces and stuff. And we do see that with, like, a lot of, like, more independent idols as idol groups as well. But, you know, it is also something that I juggle with in my brain. Like, I enjoy this form of media or entertainment, I guess. And at the same time, I have to sit with the fact and the knowing that, like, a lot of what happens in this behind the scenes in this form of entertainment is real rough on girls. And I'm just thinking about it. Listen, we're hitting the top of the hour here on Typically Tuesdays. Thank you so much for tuning in. Here's your weekly reminder to continue to email, fax, call, send letters to your public officials, your MP, the Prime Minister, the Deputy Prime Minister. Demand for an immediate, permanent ceasefire in Gaza, and demand for the end of the occupation of Palestine. I mean, the so-called 4-day truce. I'm recording this on Sunday, you're hearing it on Monday. The so-called 4-day truce is simply that. It is 4 days, and the conditions of the truce have already been breached. We have had reports on the ground in Gaza that occupation forces have shot Guzzins who are returning to connect with family members. And so there has been no truce. And even if there was, it cannot simply be a few days long. It's got to be a permanent truce to work towards the end of the occupation of Palestine. Come on. So do it. Write your letters, write your emails, write your faxes, and make those calls to demand for an immediate permanent ceasefire in Gaza and to call for the end of the occupation of Palestine. Tune in to more great CJSF programming. Check out Democracy Now! Every Monday to Friday from 11 to 12 with your host Amy Goodman, getting that good, accurate news from the ground. My name is Leslie. Thank you so much for tuning in to Typically Tuesdays here today on 90.1 FM. And why else would I make the show if not to share things that I love with you? You might recall, I played Hikaru Utada's First Love last week on the program because I needed to prime you. I needed to prime you for what I'm about to share. This cover of First Love, as seen on Produce 101 Japan Season 3, changed my brain chemistry, made me even more insufferable of a person than I am ever, that I would have ever been, and it's made me into the woman that I am today. I need you to listen to it, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I do. So this is First Love, as seen on Produce 101 Japan Season 3. I hope you enjoy. And I'll see you next week. It is so good. You.